Welcome to Spectrum from China America Radio, a weekly public service production featuring news, information, and stories of interest to our China America Radio listeners in the United States and around the world. Now, here's this week's host, Steve Warren.
Welcome to another edition of Spectrum. We have a repeat guest. His name is Phil Chan. Phil is a former ballet dancer. He's written a book called Final Bow for Yellow Face about the portrayal of Asian characters in ballet, particularly in The Nutcracker. So Phil is back with us to kind of bring us up to date, since this is the time of year that we all sort of think about The Nutcracker, and many of us miss going to those annual Christmas time performances. Phil, welcome back to China America Radio. What's it been like in a world without Nutcracker?
Well, first of all, I think it's really important that we recognize that ballet companies are really dependent on Nutcracker revenue. They make up to, 40, sometimes up to 60% of a company's annual budget just from the 6 weeks between Thanksgiving and New Year's. So this is a real financial hit. So in addition to having to cancel many live performances already, throughout the year, to not even be able to make their money back through Nutcracker is really a potentially devastating blow for a lot of dance companies. So it's really important, first of all, if anyone's listening, to please support your local performing arts organizations, even if you're not a ballet fan, but support your local Peking Opera Troupe, support your, whatever performing art you are passionate about. They really need your dollars right now more than ever. So that's been a huge impact. But I think emotionally, there's something about having this ritual every year, the music, the rehearsals, the children. It means so much for young students to be able to have this experience, because you're starting off as a mouse, and then you're moving up to a soldier, and then you get to maybe dance one of the harder variations, working your way up to Sugar Plum Fairy. So it really it's a rite of passage for many young dancers. So to have that taken away as well is particularly hard. It's I think it's one of those things where we've always had a love-hate relationship with the Nutcracker. And on one hand, it's nice for many dancers to be able to spend the holidays with their families, but also there's something not right about not having that ritual and not hearing the music and not being in that magic.
Well, you mentioned not hearing the music, although if you walk through department stores and streets and building lobbies and all of that, occasionally you will get to hear the Sugar Plum Fairy come playing through the speakers.
Yeah, most people are even barely enjoying the shopping experience right now with the COVID pandemic. So, barely shopping when you have to, just going out for the essentials, trying to buy things online. So I'm even noticing I'm not really hearing Christmas music this year unless I consciously play it in my home. So yeah, I do think that people are going to miss the music of the Nutcracker, and it's just everywhere during the, during the holiday season, that when you're not out around other people, there's, you don't know that you're missing it unless it's just become background music in some ways. So I guess maybe this is a chance for us to pause and really say, hey, this is something that I miss, I enjoy, it makes my holiday mean something, and I want to participate next year and support any way I can this year.
And if you have a recording, video or CD of the score or of a performance, put it on, crank it up.
Yeah, a lot of ballet companies all across the world are streaming their Nutcrackers either for free or through popular streaming services. So there is still a way to get your Nutcracker fix if you need a hit.
That was actually my next question. I'm going to put you on the spot, but have you seen any innovative presentations of the Nutcracker in lieu of live performances or in lieu of live performances?
Yeah,
in the live
space? I'm gonna give a shout out to the Brooklyn Ballet. Right here in New York City. They do a reimagined Nutcracker, where in the second act they actually have people from those cultures performing an interpretation to the Tchaikovsky music. So they have a Spanish flamenco dancer. They have a Chinese dance troupe. Beautiful, like 12 dancers, 16 dancers with fans. Mm-hmm. And it's classical Chinese dance, and so they have all of these different cultures represented in a more authentic way, but it's still the Nutcracker. So I think that's a really creative solution that's it's just one way to do it. It's not the way to do it, but I think that's what's so great about the Nutcracker is it's big enough for lots of different types of interpretations, because the meaning is so universal for people.
Our guest this week is Phil Chan. Phil has been with us before. He came out with a book last year called Final Vow for Yellowface, and it had to do with the stereotyping of the Asian characters as they appear in The Nutcracker, and then beyond that in perhaps other performances of other works. Since then, your hard copy has come out. What has the Yellowface movement up to these days?
Well, we're actually furiously working to release what we're calling Mystery Nutcracker Theater. We wanted to question, in this time where everyone is streaming Nutcrackers, to think about what are we actually looking at on stage, especially since potentially this year we might have a larger audience who normally wouldn't buy a ticket, who's able to now watch Nutcracker at home. So what are the messages we're sending to them about what we're putting out there? We wanted to question sort of the tradition and taking things for granted. So we decided that how can we take the sort of Eurocentric center out of the Nutcracker, where we assume that the people of the world are seen through this one point of view. So what would a Chinese person looking at this strange ethnic folk dance called the Nutcracker look like? So we reached out to Chinese Theater Works, who's a local Chinese shadow puppet troupe here in New York City, and worked with them to design some characters, worked with a great animator, Darren Moreno, who's editing it, but we're producing essentially a Chinese shadow puppet overlay of a 1984 archival production of The Nutcracker from Ballet West. Okay. Ballet West has been a huge supporter of my work and has graciously opened up their archives, on many occasions. And so the production we're looking at is by the Christensen brothers. It was actually America's original Nutcracker production, which premiered in 1944 at San Francisco Ballet, which is Ballet West's sort of sister company. They share the same founders. So this is sort of the only company in America currently performing the original American production. So sort of fun to be able to share that, because I think a lot of people are more familiar with the Balanchine version, which I think a lot of the major companies do today. So
especially what we're people here in New York.
Exactly. Yeah. He does have Balanchine's version does have a very strong pull here in New York City. So that's sort of the immediate plans right now. I sent a first draft to my editor of my second book, which is called Shades of the Orient. I'm working on it through a fellowship at the New York Public Library, Dance Research Fellowship. And it's a survey of about 100 different ballets from 1700 to today, about 100 Orientalist ballets. So studying how the East was represented on the ballet stage for the last 300-400 years. What I'm coming to the conclusion is that we need to, in a nutshell, replace Orientalism with actual Asian creators. So authentic Asian voices, if we're pushing for diversity, equity, inclusion, that's what it means. So you can't just do La Bayadere and say, oh, it's a fantasy of India. You need to include Indian American collaborators, choreographers, artists in the community as well, if you want Indianness on our stage.
I didn't get the chance to ask you last time, but I was wondering, when the Nutcracker is presented by Asian ballet companies in Asian countries, how do they portray the Chinese characters in that particular dance segment?
You're talking about two issues here. First of all is the sort of how Asians are represented mm-hmm. in their own versions of Nutcracker, and then also how did they handle the caricature elements. So maybe answering the second one first. If you are in the majority, so you're a Chinese person in China, when you see a funny clown character, you just think, oh, that's a funny clown person. But if you come to the United States and you're in the minority, and the only Asian you see is always the buffoonish clown, then you start to realize, oh, this is actually a caricature, not just that has harm, as someone in the minority that's informing other people about what Chineseness means, compared to my experience in China, where it's just a clown, because we also have smart people, noble people, funny people. It's just nuance. It's you can still have caricature in a culture but it doesn't have the same sort of bite. So I think that's the reason why, you know, how these things might register differently. Of course, there'll be individual geopolitical, you know, jabs like that. That's part of art. All art, I think, is inherently political. So, of course, you'll be able to tell sort of geopolitical relationships based on what is reflected in the art. So back to your first question about what, how do Asian companies handle the Nutcracker? I actually really love how the National Ballet of China handles it. They don't call it the Nutcracker. They call it Chinese New Year. It's instead of at a Christmas party, it's at a Chinese New Year celebration. And so all of the guests come at the beginning, and instead of the grandparents' dance, there are the 12 animals of the zodiac come out and they do a dance. Instead of a snowflake scene, it's white cranes in front of a jade tree, very beautiful, abstract. And then the second act, which is the Kingdom of the Sweets, are all of the different candies you would get at Chinese New Year, you know, the like Lazy Susan, where there's, you know, the watermelon seeds and the hawthorn and the coconut and all of those treats make an appearance in the second act. There's also Mother Ginger, instead of being a woman and all her kids live under her skirt in the sort of Eurocentric version. They wheel out this giant fat pig, this gold pig, and then out pops all these little kids and dance in gold ingot costumes. You know, it's just like, yeah, of course, Chinese people love money, you know, and it's like, it's perfect. And that is such a Chinese New Year thing, you know, so there are dancing red envelopes, there's dancing hawthorns. I mean, it's Chinese New Year. And so it's a way to still keep the Tchaikovsky music. They've changed the choreography, but to be able to still participate in this tradition, but make it about themselves and not about those exotic people over there. And I think that's what we have to do more of in these Western classical art forms, whether it's theater, opera, ballet. We need to, as Americans, say, okay, we're bringing these classics over from Europe, but we have to recognize that that point of view was for, you know, the aristocrats of Europe, for nobility. It was made for rich people. And now we're making it for people like you and me. So how do we have to adapt this work, which still has value, but make it for people today as a performing living art form? So I think that's sort of the challenge that I've been asking my colleagues in the performing arts community to have, especially when we represent people who are colonized or people of color.
But there was a time that I thought it was cool to have a Christmas party in the summer. And I would put up a tree and I'd roast a turkey. I'd bring all my friends over. They would bring gifts. We would do the whole thing. So I'm wondering if perhaps these ballet companies might be inspired to do their Nutcracker this summer when things are relaxed and we can all assemble again and perhaps have a second shot at getting some of that revenue and giving the people a real tangible opportunity to show up and support the company.
Absolutely. I would say Christmas in July, you know, and when you can come to the ballet and includes a dose of the vaccine too while you're waiting in the lobby. I mean, that's what I want to hear.
Well, listen, Phil, thank you very much for joining us again. The second book that you are working on presently, give us a little peek behind the curtain of what it's about.
Yeah, it's basically just tracing this idea that Asians have been Asianness has been defined by the majority voice, you know, the loudest voice in European high art, by two-dimensional objects for so long. So if you think about vases, porcelain, fans, objects of depictions of Asians, that's really what informed playwrights, composers, ballet choreographers, painters to represent Asian people in that way. So even things like scale, you have Chinese, we're doing a project about porcelain right now. In Chinese art, you have symbols as opposed to perspective. And so Chinese people would paint a tree and a person and they'd be the same size. And Europeans would see that and they thought that they were giant people or tiny trees. You know, so like there's all of this interesting cross-cultural misunderstandings. The problem is we have so many years of that becoming then a tradition. Oh, this is how we represent Chinese people. This is how we represent Arabs. This is how we represent Indian people. And then suddenly we're at this point where we were saying, yes, diversity, equity, inclusion. We want more Chinese people to join our boards and be students, enroll in the ballet school and come and be seasoned subscribers. And then we're still presenting images of how Chinese people looked to people during the Baroque era, as opposed to what we actually look like today, or from our actual, you know, historic culture, now that we know better. So there's this push between tradition and conservative because of the nature of the art form, and actually seeing people and giving people of color the chance to be reflected on the stage in a way that has integrity. So that's the sort of dilemma that this book tries to highlight, and using history in a fun way. I mean, I found so many funny anecdotes about East-West, you know, miscommunications that have just informed over time, you know, so that's been a lot of fun. So it's a little history and a lot of very interesting.
Yes, indeed. Well, it sounds like it's going to be very interesting. Also gives you a lot of opportunities for illustrations to, you know, do some visual stuff, which would be very cool. Well, listen, Phil Chan is with us. He's you still have the website up and running for Yellow Face. Tell our listeners how they can connect with you or tap into your project.
So folks can come to visit us at yellowface.org. We have resources on the site that are free for the community about the Nutcracker, which has makeup tips, costume tips, choreography tips. I'm also building out a timeline so that people can have even more educational resources. You can also buy the first book, Final Bow for Yellowface, on the site there. And you can also hopefully catch Mystery Nutcracker Theater, which will be live on the site. We're hoping for Christmas Eve.
Very good. Hey, thank you very much, Phil. Have a great new year.
Listen again next Sunday at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern for another edition of Spectrum. To hear previously broadcast editions of Spectrum, visit the Spectrum tab on our website to listen or download your favorite past programs. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Spectrum. Now, back to the music on China America Radio.